Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
And I'm Jess, the Dark Nerd.
And this episode is our spoiler-filled review and discussion of Alita Battle Angel. Let's get right into it. So, if you do not want to hear spoilers for Alita Battle Angel,
run screaming into the streets. Get out of here. Take your kids. Get your wives, get your husbands, get out of here,
because that's
we're
right.
Spoiling everything around.
That's right. Yeah. What he said. So, that said, let's move on to the spoiler review. Okay, so let's get into the spoiler-filled review. So we've already talked about like our general impressions, and I want to come back to this idea of there being too much material from, you know, the manga kind of shoved into this movie, because you know, I think that in general they handled it quite well, but because the end felt like they didn't really resolve anything major, right? It was just a lead-in, or not quite a cliffhanger, really, but it was definitely
saying... Well, literally,
saying,
the actual last scene of the movie was the introduction of a character, you know? It's like you see him bits and pieces. You don't see him really much throughout it, but then it's just like, boom, here's the guy.
And well, then... they showed Nova for the first time, played by Edward Norton. That's who you're talking about, right?
Right.
Okay, so Nova, I mean, I see what you're saying, but they had mentioned him many times throughout the movie previous to that. That was just the first time that we saw him, but it really felt like a tease, like there's more to come. Make sure you tune in. And or maybe never to the next movie. I just felt like they didn't quite give us a satisfying resolution to the main story that they told. Now, there was a resolution in that the love story with Yugo was resolved because he died.
Because it ended.
Right. But I just felt that. So here's what I'm talking about and how this relates to shoving too much into it. There were these scenes where she's having memories come back to her, because originally Ito, Christoph Waltz's character, finds her in the scrapyard under Zalem, and he's like, wow. And he gives her a body and fixes her up, and she wakes up and, you know, she has amnesia. She doesn't remember who she is or her name or anything. Well, you know, later in the movie, I think this always happened when she was, like, in the middle of, like, a fight with somebody, right? Like, whether it was Gruishka.
Right, before a fight, she'd, like, get intuition from past
Well,
memories.
She would have, like, a flash of memory, right? And then, like, they were always, like, she was a soldier and she was either training or she was in the middle of a battle. That battle, like, that, even though there wasn't many shots, that little battle sequence on the moon with her was really cool.
Yeah.
And then the one where they're trying to, like, scale the tubes up to Zalem. I think those are the only ones I remember right now. But
and I believe the other lady she was with, I believe that was Michelle Rodriguez. It's like, why would they put her in a movie for 4 seconds?
Yeah, that was her, Gelda. Her character's name was Gelda.
That was Alita's captain or something.
So, but the point is, that was interesting, but I think that maybe including those memory flashbacks was a little too much, because it didn't really, I mean, I guess there were a couple other instances, like things that it tied into where she was talking about her past. But the problem is that entire subplot did not pay off in the movie.
Yeah, they talked about the fall and they talked about, what was it, the Terrestrial War.
That was all interesting backstory. That was all interesting backstory. And you still could have had mention of it. But the fact that they had scenes of her in her, like, old life over 300 years ago, that did not pay off at the end. I feel like they should have used that time. They should have used that time to develop her relationship more with Yugo, with Ito, Christoph Waltz's character. And possibly do, you know, a couple other things, maybe flesh out the setting a little bit more. And because you don't need those flashbacks of hers in order to talk about or to present somehow the backstory of this, you know, big war that helped create the post-apocalypse that everybody, you know, lives in now. And it also contributed to an ending where you're kind of teasing a character and a whole new plot line that may or may not come in a future movie. Well, that is planned to come in a future movie, I'm sure, but you may or may not get that movie.
Right.
Whereas I think you could have spent more time, instead of those flashbacks, just developing the characters more, you know, developing the relationships more, putting a little bit more, giving the actors a little bit more meat to work with. Because Jennifer Connelly, for example, she's in this movie. And I think this is one of the characters that was changed that you were talking about.
Right.
She was, you know, Ito's like ex-wife from Zalem, and you know, they have a tragic
and
story.
And I don't think she was in the manga.
I don't remember her being in the manga, but I the later volumes.
She was in it, but she was the blonde in the anime. She was the blonde girl.
You mean the one that got killed at the beginning?
No, she was.
I mean, there was another character in the manga that smoked those long cigarettes like that, but she wasn't. I mean, she was like a prostitute that got killed by the murderer in the beginning.
No. That was by Grushka, who wasn't, like, Grushka didn't exist in the manga or stuff. They, like, took a couple of people together and made him.
Yes, yeah. So here's the other thing that I wanted to mention regarding the adaptation and squeezing things in. So Yugo's character, okay, they really toned him down in the movie, Alita.
Mm-hmm.
I think to make him more sympathetic. Because so in the movie, if you've seen the movie, which is why I assume you're listening to the spoiler podcast, the spoiler part here. But in the movie, you know, he's the bad thing that he's doing is he's stealing like parts from cyborgs. Right. They steal that one guy's weapon on his arm with the razor fingers that shoot out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing that for a while. Now, in the manga and in the anime, he's stealing people's spines.
Right.
He's literally...
Yeah, that's the thing. All these cyborgs, I mean, the only human part left of them is their brain and their spine.
Right.
And if they're lucky, you know, most of their face. So in the mangas and stuff, they would go and just rip their spines and brains out, you know, and take that.
Well, he wouldn't take their brains because he still wasn't trying to actually kill people in the manga, if I'm not mistaken. But it was like he would take out your spine, and they made a big deal about the fact that was like the only part of the body that they can't replicate, right? With some right. type of like cyber implant. So he was stealing, he was, you know, knocking people out or sedating them or whatever, or just, you know, disabling them somehow. There's this one image that I remember from the anime or the manga where he's literally like using a crowbar to like pry out their spine. And it was pretty gruesome, actually. And so that really makes his character a bit darker, in my opinion. I mean, you know, I'm all for equal rights of cyborgs, but it just seems more horrific to me to rip out someone's actual spine and vertebral column than it does to like take off
a robot arm.
Exactly.
You know, an attachment. You know, they pretty boyed him up for the movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what they were trying to do is make him more sympathetic, but consequently, I think it made that whole arc of not only his arc, but the arc of their relationship less tragic.
Less tragic. And there's not as much feeling that you really, as a viewer, get out of it. It's like okay, apparently he's cute and she likes him.
Right.
You know, they don't really have any sort of character building as far as relationship. They see each other, get googly eyed, say six sentences, and then they're in love. And then
there was also, yeah, I mean, there was also a lot more to his story in the manga. I mean, he was, in the manga, it goes through the story of when he was, you know, younger, when he was a kid, and he, like, lived with his brother and his brother's girlfriend, and, like, his brother was, like, an engineer who made this, it was a hot air balloon, basically. You know, it was kind of the cyberpunk, steampunkish version of a hot air balloon. And but anything that can fly and like get up to Zalem is illegal. And so the authorities somehow found this out, and they came and they like murdered his brother and his girlfriend, which he, you know, narrowly escaped that. And then he, you know, becomes homeless, and he's trying to survive on the streets. And then one day he's like passing by one of these shops in the market that sells, you know, extra body parts and cybernetic components and things. And he sees his brother's hand in there because it has like a distinctive scar or a tattoo or something on it.
Right.
And he, that part wasn't in the movie, was it?
Nope.
Okay. For some reason,
I do not recall any window shopping.
But he sees it, and then there's this whole scene where he goes up to the guy and he's like, hey, how much do you want for the hand? And the vendor's like, you know, you can't afford it. And he goes, I'll give you mine. It's younger, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay. And so he takes his hand and he puts on his brother's hand. And that's like, you know, and that whole flashback sequence comes from like him and Alita are hanging out. And she's like, oh, what's that scar from? You know, and he tells her this story about his past where he becomes, you know, very vulnerable in dealing with her when he's the kind of guy that's, you know, out doing crime and like not, you know, forming other close relationships. And anyway, what I'm saying is they could have had that kind of thing in the movie instead of her having flashbacks of memories, you know, to 300 exactly. years ago. So that is just an example of one thing that I might have considered were I doing this. And that choice, I think, could have made that scene, you know, where he dies more powerful and helped to contribute to, you know, maybe a more satisfying resolution in that case. Because then instead of just the rollerball scene at the very end where she's got the new rollerball body, it's like regulation, right? You can't have ones that are like too strong or too soft. That's how they explained it in the comics, which is why she has that new body. But, you know, instead of just having the scene where she like walks out and raises her sword to the, you know, to Zalem because she's angry and she's like, I'm going to get up there by winning the rollerball tournament. Instead of that, you know, maybe they could have had the whole plot of the why she gets into rollerball in the first place. I mean, it's not just because she's, you know, super talented, like athletic. It's because she was driven to submerge herself in that sport after the love of her life dies in front of her and she couldn't stop it. Right.
Right. And two, also, basically that's the only way to get to Zalem is to master rollerball. That's how you get your ticket.
Right.
You know, you master and you become the champion of rollerball and then you get your golden ticket up to Zalem. So that's what she's doing.
Did they mention that in the movie Alita that's how you can get to Zalem? Because I don't remember.
I don't. I've seen it four times. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure they would have had to. I've watched it so much and I've read the manga and watched the anime and read so much online. It's like, where did I get this?
Let's assume that they mentioned it in the movie. And so that is actually a motivator. Let's
pretend there's a connection.
But I think that ending could have had more weight, you know, and it could have really felt like a wrapping up of this story about her relationship with Yugo, which was such a huge part of this movie. It wasn't the only part of the movie. I mean, there was also a sort of a self-discovery arc for her, but the romance was, I mean, that was one of two, you know, vital relationships for her in the movie. The first one being with Ito, who, you know, saved her and gave her body again and then gave her another body.
Yeah. And I liked her relationship with him. The way they did it, again, they did change it. He kind of seemed a little more fatherly and protective of her in the movie.
That made sense to me. No, I don't remember in the manga him having a daughter, and that's why he had the first body that he gave her. I don't remember a subplot with him having a daughter.
No, that's why it goes. I mentioned earlier about how she got her name in the original manga. He named her Alita or Gally or whatever it was he named her because that was the name of his dead cat.
Oh, right.
So, and then in Hollywood, in the US, we got to change that to a dead daughter because everyone's going to feel sympathetic about a dead daughter. But how many times have we heard the dead daughter story? I mean, You know, it's boring. We get it. But a dead cat, you never hear that, and that's so unique. No. And I think that would have been a little spark of humor.
It would have been you know, quirkier. Sad humor. It would have been quirkier. Yeah. I wouldn't have minded it, but I do think that I don't mind them changing it to his daughter, because then I guess that also allowed them to include Jennifer Connelly's character.
Correct. As his wife, right. Ex-wife, who is right. now in league with...
I think that, you know, the biggest reason to have Jennifer Connelly's character was so that for that scene where she's in... Alita's in the church, the old church with Hugo, and he's dying because Zapan stabbed him or whatever it was.
Right.
Right, for the bounty, because he's got that bounty on his head that Vector put on there, falsely claiming that he killed someone. But that scene where Jennifer Connelly, because she's a doctor, is able to help her save his life, I feel like that was the main reason that her character was in that movie. But given that, it did make sense to connect her to Ito and for them to have that backstory that kind of explained right. why she would go from being a bad guy to like helping her in that moment. But that it is a little bit thin for me. It is, you know, again, maybe that's a situation where they could have utilized that time to focus a little bit more on Alita's arc. But I actually don't mind it, and I love Jennifer Connelly. I think every single actor in this movie did a hell of a job.
Oh, yeah. I love all the acting. Even the characters that you don't like were acted flawlessly. What's the guy that played Grushka?
Jackie Earle Haley.
Yeah, Haley. Yeah, he was Rorschach, obviously, from Watchmen. And I haven't seen him in a whole lot, but I mean, in this movie, he played Grushka great. He wasn't really acting himself because, you know, he's a big hulking beast with only his face.
It wasn't even really that
recognizable.
I mean, he's not what I thought of when I was like, great acting in this movie. He didn't do terrible. He certainly did really well, but that wasn't. That character was there to be a villain, you know? He didn't get a lot of.
And it's like, I didn't realize who it was the first time I saw it. And then later I was like, that was Rorschach? Because he's totally unrecognizable.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't even look like the face they put
on
his body.
Well, it was total CGI replacement, as far as I know. And they just did, you know, facial and motion capture. So Jennifer Connelly did such an amazing job. Because she starts off and she's really not a likable character. You know, she's working with Vector. Vector played by, I'm going to butcher his name. I'm so sorry. Mahershala Ali, who is an amazing actor in his own right. You know, he's done some really great work. And he was really good in this movie, too. Jennifer Connelly, though, it takes a great actor to pivot flawlessly from I'm a person that you either hate or love to hate, you know, kind of a despicable character into like, oh, well, you made a redeeming move here, and I can actually understand why you did that. And it's not only can I understand why because they explained it at some point, right, through her like personal story, but also because you believe it looking at her face,
right?
You know, and after that, you know, you have some kind of, or at least I had a kind of a more of a grudging respect for her, for that character and what she was able to stand up and do. That's how I feel about that. You know, Christoph Waltz is always great. No,
and like you said, it's like that's kind of an explanation for why she's in the movie. I'm still trying to find an explanation.
Look, for I why don't know that for church. Sure. I don't know that that's the reason that James Cameron and the other screenwriter, Laisha Kelligridis, I'm probably mispronouncing that. I'm so sorry. I don't know that that's why they made that decision about her character, but it just seems.
Yeah, that's not what I'm saying. It's just like, you know, if that kind of explained it for you and made it make sense to you, I'm still trying to figure out why she was in that church. You know, after the whole rollerball thing, it's like, why did she happen to just appear in that?
That was convenient. Was there a tracker? Did they have a tracker in one of them or something? I don't remember how she made it there.
I recall.
Or maybe she was spying on them before and she knew that was a place they liked to go. I can't remember.
Well, Hugo was on his bike going across town, running away from Zapan. You know, it was all high-speed chase. And then he was on the phone with Alita, who was in the rollerball tournament at the time, and she jumped through the big screen, and that was a high-speed chase. So I don't know how Chiron gets around, but she does it pretty quickly.
Let's talk about the action scenes. Let's talk about the action scene. So I think the first big action scene, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not counting the rollerball practice that she goes to with the other Lake right. Street kids. That was fun. That was cool. That got to show that she was more than meets the eye. But I think the first big action scene was the bar fight, was it?
I noticed when I was reading the manga, it was called the Kansas Bar, and it's they say that in the movie, mm-hmm. and I thought absolutely nothing of it. And it wasn't until later that I learned, you know, you're watching this movie, you don't think it takes place on Earth. You think it's in an alternate reality in some other planet. This is something somewhere far, far away. Oh, but no, it's in the manga, bar. This place, yeah, it's the Kansas Bar from Kansas City, Missouri, is the original.
Oh, right.
You know. Place for where this is taking place. Well, it's like, wow, this is Missouri of the future. Okay.
Wait, I don't think that the actual place is Missouri, but I think what happened is, so they explain this in the manga for sure, and I don't remember whether they explain it in the movie, although I have a vague memory of them doing it, but that just might be from the manga. But they say that basically after the war, this was really the only place that was left, because that was the only floating city that was left. And so people from all over the world, survivors from all over the world, came there. And that's why both in the manga and in the anime and in the movie, you have like stuff like the Kansas City Bar. And then you have like stuff in like Chinese and Japanese writing. And you have, right. you know, foods from different places and, you know, people of all different ethnicities and stuff there together. If you could show me something that said like that actually says this, they're actually in Missouri. That would be awesome. But I just don't think that's the case.
I wrote down notes in my little notepad here because it said it on the webpage I read. I'd have to look it back up. But a further note on that, which is really interesting, is it's not called Iron City in the manga or the anime, I believe. I think they changed that because James Cameron, decided to base the city more on Panama City.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because it's closer to the equator and it would better accommodate a space elevator, taking into account science.
Yeah.
So I read that as well. So
you know what? You're right.
In the like something quirky.
In the manga, the city was called Scrapyard, not right. Iron City. Yeah, it was called Scrapyard, not Iron City.
Yeah, the actual scrapyard was the name of the whole place.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so action scenes, though. So I really like the action scenes. I thought that they were fun. They made really good use of, you know, Alita's crazy cyborg martial arts called Panzerkunst. Which was a nice bit of world building, which is from a cyborg-specific martial art that was developed on like Mars. But yeah, I really liked it, and I love the guy in the bar with the robotic dogs, the cybernetic dogs.
That's the lawnmower man, Jeff Fahey,
who also was in Lost, right? As
Was he in Lost?
What was his name in Lost? He was the helicopter pilot. Frank Lapidus. Yeah, his name was Frank Lapidus in Lost. Anyway, that was what I thought of when I saw him. But what I'm talking about specifically, the moment in the movie where she goes like underneath the bar to fight Grushka, right? And they're down there in the sewers, and he's like, oh, old stuff built on top of old, dirtier stuff built on top of this with the city up above, and I live with the rats
and
down here.
And it all comes falling down.
Right. But, you know, there's that very intense fight sequence between them. And a lot of those shots from that fight sequence are like directly from the manga, like especially where she's like spinning around his arm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Spiraling around his arm.
When she does the kick,
mm-hmm.
the drop kick. That.
And then, of course, you know, the
Oh, no, wait,
that fight.
There was there was a fight earlier, because this was after he got his tickly fingers. There was a scene earlier in the movie where she chopped his arm straight off with her kick.
Oh, that was when they attacked Ito, wasn't it?
That was when they were right. in the alleyway and the okay. spider girl. And then
so she was following.
This was actually the second.
She was following Ito because she had this suspicion that he was the murderer. Because he went out right. mysteriously at night, and then the next day reports of, you know, this woman being murdered. And then so she's following him, and Gruishka and a couple of his buddies basically lead Ito into an ambush, and she saves him. She right. saves his butt, and she kicks their asses. And then
she tried to intervene because she thought he was going to kill that girl.
Right.
They don't really go into that more. The in manga and anime, you know, there's a murderer going around town killing all these girls. So she gets an inkling it's him, follows him, and tries to intervene because yep. she thinks he's going to kill this girl. Well, he's actually a hunter warrior.
Right.
And he's killing a bad robot.
That same thing, that whole same sequence of things happens in the manga and the anime and in the movie.
Exactly.
So that was the first action scene. And that was a cool little fight. That was her sort of figuring out that she was that she could fight, which was mm-hmm. interesting. And I think she might have had her first flashback during that fight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, she did.
Maybe that was the one where she saw
right
that she was
right before she did
the
kick.
Right, right. And so she took off his arm, yeah, and then he comes back with his tickle fingers, which Yugo stole, right, mm-hmm. from that rollerball guy. So, right. but then, you know,
And my question is, where do all those fingers go? Because they come firing out of his hand, and you saw when they took it off of the rollerball guy, that thing was like a foot and a half long. It, like, didn't even look like a full arm.
They must be coiled inside.
Got 40 feet. Yeah, it's magic.
It's magic cyborg arm. So one thing I want to mention about this fight, though, where she fights Gruishka starting in the bar and then down below, is that was a great fight scene because she got her ass handed to her. She got her butt kicked
in pieces.
She got her butt kicked. So the thing pieces, like, to the point where her arms and legs are getting ripped off. And even when she only had one arm left, she's not giving up. She did that move where she balances on her one arm and she pushes her, she thrusts herself up into the air, and then she, you know, basically drives her fist through his eyeball. That was amazing. And then, you know, after that, it's like when the dog guy comes down. This is why I mentioned the dog guy in the first place, Jeff Fahey. It's when he comes down and the dogs chase off Gruishka, and he has that line where he's like, "He don't like dogs. I hate that."
Yeah,
or whatever he says.
Yeah, because obviously Gruishka killed the little yappy dog.
The little yappy
that
dog.
That was done very, mm-hmm. very family friendly in this movie.
Now, that's out of the comics, too, although that happened in a different scene in the comics.
Well, it was a different area, different scene. And mm-hmm. I know in the anime, you got to see intestines. In this one, you just saw it happened off screen.
We did not see intestines.
Because there's no... If they did that on screen in America, this movie would not have made $400, much less almost $400 million.
Well, I think it would have made more than $400, but it would have been a different... It would not have been as quite as family-friendly.
Loss of controversy, yes. Yeah, kill a dog. Nope, that's a rated R movie all of a sudden. But, you know, dismembering robots left and right, cyborgs.
Yeah, what I like about that action scene is that... You know, it really does use that action to reveal character. It shows you that mm-hmm. she is through and through a warrior. She's not given up. She is not given up. She is going to, you know, rage against the dying of the light. And rage against the machines. That's right.
Before we move on, since we just were talking about the fight scenes and her Panzerkunst, I read a couple... actually a really good video and then read an article about it. She actually did spend about 6 months learning this, all the moves, you know, when she's, before she gets her berserker body, she's practicing her moves in the mirror, and, you know, she punches and
Rosa Salazar, the actress. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Correct. That was actually Panzerkunst it's a little bit of Muay Thai, Kung Fu, Wing Chun, and Jeet Kune Do, which was actually innovated by Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And Rosa Salazar studied Bruce Lee and, oh, you know, did all her practicing and stuff based off of him. And she studied Bruce Lee to embody the physical prowess, basically, of a battle angel. Because one of his things was to be a warrior in motion and a warrior at rest. And you mm-hmm. see that a lot in the way she holds herself and carries herself. Because even though it's CGI, it is the motion capture where when she's standing there, you see how she's standing. And she did get, you know, that a warrior in motion and
I agree. Rest
kind of stance. Because she was always jumping into motion and action.
Yeah, even when mm-hmm. she was just standing there, she looked like she was ready to spring into action and kick some butt. I mean, you're right.
Yeah, and that when she does it, it's called the chain punching. You know, and I actually read behind the reason for that punching. It's meant for close quarters, hand-to-hand combat. Like in boxing, when you jab and stuff, that's to help you, you know, move back or move forward. But in the Jeet Kune Do or whatever it was, Wing Chun, there's like five different types of
yeah, I think Bruce Lee was Wing Chun.
Yeah, it's just made to keep yourself right there and able to, you know, administer the damage. You can see that in a lot of the fight scenes. Like she's just like when she grabs Zapan, puts his hand on her shoulder or neck, I can't remember.
Oh, and she grabs his throat and smashes him into the table. I love that. Yeah. You know, because it was not.
It'd be so easy to do that with a cyborg because you're not grabbing a neck, you're grabbing a piston. You know, it's easily grabbable. You just grab it, slam.
Sure. And I just love in that moment how she was no hesitation at all. You know, she had been in one or two fights like before then in the movie, but there was no hesitation at all. She just. Oh, it was just such a satisfying moment. So then,
yeah, and it's not like she like grabbed him to choke him and get him away. She just grabbed him and
yeah. So then she gets her new body because the first one was destroyed by Grishka. And I think one of the other things they changed from the manga was the fact that she found that berserker body from the Mars spacecraft that had crashed hundreds of years ago. I don't mind that change either. I think it makes sense in a certain way if she is one of these Mars warriors and, you know, she happens to go in there and the computers and everything respond to her. That made sense to me. But that was definitely one of the things that they changed.
Right.
So, but then after that, what was the next action scene after that? I mean, I know there was the whole rollerball thing, but was there one before that?
Well, she got the berserker body, but again, like I mentioned earlier, Ito, who's kind of more of a protective father figure, didn't want her to
didn't want to give it to her, but that's when she went to the bar after that. Well, she went to become a hunter, she got registered as a hunter warrior, and then she went to the bar, right? And then it was after Grishka tore her apart that he finally relented and was like, okay, he said you were right. Didn't he say you were right, a warrior spirit needs a warrior's body,
right? Which is a good line.
Okay, so then after she gets her body, her berserker body, I know she meets up with Yugo. She's like, oh, I have more nerve endings now. And they like make out.
Yeah.
Whatever. Maybe they. Right. Yeah, they do make out. And
then they went into the little flame that comes off of her finger, the little flames that come out of her arm. And then at the end of the movie, the flames go up the Damascus blade, her sword, which she got from Zapan.
That was interesting.
Which was different than in the movie.
That was different.
Really, I wanted them to go more into the plasma powers. You know, because it's like the only time you see him is the tip of her finger on the sword and a little beep.
I don't necessarily mind that they didn't get too much into it, but that would be something, because that's a lot to do with her backstory, right? From Hunt like 300 years ago. And so I wouldn't mind if they just kind of, you know, I don't mind that they didn't get into it more in this movie, but I would expect them to get into it a lot more in the next movie.
Well, it's kind of like in any other movie where you have a spaceship or something and you just can't get to where you need to go. So you go talk to the old weird guy that lives under the city and he outfits your spaceship with these big jets. And then at the time in the movie when it's appropriate, you kick an overdrive.
Right. So you're saying
they kind of did the same thing. She got the new outfitted ship and then you never really see it get kicked into overdrive.
But I think that the whole Damascus sword was something that was not in the manga. At least I don't remember it being in the manga. There was a Damascus sword that came from a rollerball guy, but it didn't come from Zapan.
Well, in the manga, it was like a blade on each arm. She had two blades that were part of her rollerball suit. And you saw that one scene in the movie where she like clicks the sword into her arm.
Right.
In the manga, she originally had two. That's where she got the blade, was from her rollerball suit.
Right.
That's not from defeating.
Right. So, right. So then the rollerball action scene was really cool. It was, I mean, because they're flying around this track, and there's that moment where you realize that every single person that she's racing against, the only reason they're there is to kill her.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was really cool. And, you know, reading the manga, you know, it's drawn so well and you really get the sense of motion. And I was really happy with how they adapted that scene onto the big screen, mm-hmm. because in the anime, they didn't deal with the rollerball stuff at all.
No, it wasn't even mentioned.
In fact, I'm not even sure whether the issues that dealt with her time in Rollerball were even written in 1993 at the time that they did the animated movie.
Yeah, because it's based just strictly off of like the first two.
Yeah. And again, I love the Rollerball sequence. Of course, she ducks out at a certain point to go save Yugo. Right. And then they're racing through the city. And that was fun.
How does she become the champion if she jumps through the wall and takes off during the middle of it?
In the manga, she was doing that first match in order to qualify for the actual rollerball games.
Okay.
I believe that's what it was. And then there was this subplot where she wanted to be number 99, but there was already a number 99. And so she had to do like a one-on-one rollerball, like practice skirmish match against him. And that was a fun little thing.
Yeah. And then the 99 was from back that when was, she was a soldier.
Right.
In
right.
The war. So they didn't really get into that.
But what I've been trying to say here about the rollerball in the movie is that this is an example of them maybe including a little bit too much from the manga in this particular movie, because
they don't explain it.
Again, she got into rollerball in the manga because she was so heartbroken about what happened to Yugo.
Yeah, something to take.
And she was, she was broken because of everything that happened. And so I feel like if they had used that time, come on, they couldn't have found another action scene for her to do. there's plenty of opportunities. Right. It's easy to criticize these movies. It's hard to put together a script that works on all these levels and everything. But I'm just saying, because of the fact that like at the end of it, I'm feeling like, wait, is that the end of this movie? I'm feeling like maybe they could have used some of these other scenes instead of dealing with stuff that, you know, more properly belongs in the story a little bit later. At least that's how it was originally written. You know, maybe you could have used that time to give us a more satisfying ending to this movie.
Right.
That's how I feel about that. But I love the rollerball sequence. It was fun. And she's at the top of her game.
After that, of course, that's when, you know, she jumps through the screen, goes to save Hugo, and then Zapan stabs him in the gut, and she saves him by cutting his head off and attaching it to
her heart.
I guess her heart or her body.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that it that still
keeps
gets blood.
Him alive. Mm-hmm. Right. So it keeps him alive so they can put him in his own little.
Yeah. And that body. In and of itself is so tragic. Right. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it's a little bit of poetic justice given that he was stealing body parts from other people. So I really right. like that symmetry of it. But so, okay, this leads up to that climactic scene where he's trying to get up to Zalem because he's like half crazed and, you know, he's lost his body and he just wants to see the freaking place before he dies. That scene, when I watched the anime, which I saw the anime before I read the manga, okay, and that scene in the anime was like one of the most intense scenes that I had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Really. It was so affecting. Like, it was such a tragic end to that love story. And I thought it worked so well. Now, in the movie Alita, it was still tragic. It was still, I think, effective. But it didn't feel as intense.
Right. Well, again, they didn't really build up Hugo that much in the movie. And like you said, they kind of softened him a bit. And I really didn't care about him. You know, I didn't feel anything for him.
Yeah.
In the anime, you get a little more, you know.
So maybe
out of him. So you put more emotion into him. But when he died in the movie, it was like, yeah, whatever.
What do you think about this? So if they had spent more time on developing him and his relationship with Alita instead of her having flashbacks to 300 years ago, which that setup stuff never pays off with anything, really. I mean, there's a moment where she's like, you're saying I'm 300 years old, Ido. And he says, actually, his line was great. He goes, sweetheart, you are. And that was cool.
Yeah.
But like that wasn't really – the movie didn't need that moment. So I think that if they would have taken out, for example, the flashbacks,
right,
and also possibly replaced the motorball action scene with some other action scene, then I feel like we might have cared a lot more about Hugo. And that scene at the end where he's trying to get to Zalem, and then he gets shredded by the defense system coming down the tube. And, you know, she tries to hold on to him, but he falls down and dies. I feel like that scene would have had a lot more impact. I mean, do you think that if the movie had gone through this, like his story where with his brother and all of that, that I mentioned, that it would have been more affecting for you?
Yeah, I do. Especially because, like you mentioned, like his brother's hand, and that gives him more character and more of his motivation and his drive for why he's doing what he's doing. But in this, he's just like a punk, you know, that ends up working for Vector, and then he gets caught, and he gets spanked, then he gets stabbed, then he gets, you know, his own body, and it's like the moment he goes from getting his own body to being dead is how many minutes on film? It's like we don't get to see him, like, they kind of did the same thing in the manga, too, or the anime, where he gets the new body and then just takes off instantly.
Well, like, I don't mind that, but you have to set it up properly. Right? Right. Like
it's like, well, where did he go? Oh, he went that way.
Well, obviously that's where he would go. But I think that, you know, in the anime and the manga, they developed his psychology more so that you know that once he wakes up, I mean, he's going to be
right.
He's going to lose it. So anyway, that would have been, I mean, again, I did really enjoy this movie. I just think that if they would have spent more time developing him and his relationship with Alita and maybe switching out some of those other things with it for time, that it would have had more of an impact, more of a, the movie would have felt like more of a resolution. And then you could have, at the end, you know, she could have been joining up for Rollerball because, you know, she was heartbroken and all these other things.
Right.
Those are my thoughts. So let's maybe finish up by talking about, well, anything else that we want to talk about. But I do just want to mention that, like, the design of this movie, the visual design of it, of the setting, of the characters, all the cyborgs and things, I just loved it. I mean, I love science fiction and, like, cyberpunk stuff. And this was really a feast for the eyes.
You know, anything post-apocalyptic, I'm like, yeah, let me see it. Because, you know, that's where we're going to be in 100 years, 200 years, you know, building robots out of scrap that falls out of the sky. So it's kind of like a prepper, you know, it's a cyborg prepper.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how close, you know, in our lifetimes we actually get to this type of technology. The prosthetic limbs they have these days are just, I mean, they're amazing.
And there was that one guy, I think late last year was supposed to be that they were going to attempt that first head transplant.
Oh my god, that's right. The Russian guy.
Another body, and then I never heard anything of it. But yeah, I mean, because that would specifically be the surgery and medical science and stuff we need to perfect if we're ever going to have an Alita Battle Angel in the future. You know?
I don't think they actually have done that surgery yet. Yeah, I don't think there was a big deal made of that. I don't think that's actually happened, but it's obviously something that a lot of people are interested in.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Elon Musk has a company that's working on that that mesh that would go into your brain that would technically connect you to a computer, right? So, you know, people are looking into these things. So
that's just an outpatient surgery, I'm sure.
What are your final thoughts on Alita: Battle Angel?
I'm really hoping there's a sequel. The story needs it. I'd like to see more of it. I love, like you said, you love the setting, you love the characters, you love the way it looks, love the action, the direction's fantastic, acting's fantastic, and there's so much more source material to get into that I haven't even been exposed to. Like I said, there's spin-offs here and there, and there's comic books that are, like, you know, not completely related to the main storyline, and they've been around for years. There's plenty of reasons to make more sequels, and I can't think of many reasons not to, because the movie's making buckets of money.
It's doing pretty well. It's like we said, it's almost $400 million at the worldwide box office at this point, and it's still in theaters too. I mean, really, it's still in theaters. Was there any other final thoughts you had for it?
I do think it's, so far, in my opinion, the best anime to live action movie adaptation humankind has completed.
Holy cow! I think you're right.
Ghost in the Shell was okay with Scarlett Johansson, but it got, I mean, it was.
And I don't blame Scarlett Johansson for that. She did as good as she could have with what she was given.
I only watched it once, so I haven't really got into it enough to really understand the problems or, you know, read any really reviews on it. But a lot of that stuff, too, they did do kind of scene for scene from the original anime, which was cool.
Some of it.
But yeah, what else? You got Ghost in the Shell. You got Dragon Ball Z.
Ugh. The live action.
Yeah, I didn't even watch it because I've never even understood
Death Note on Netflix.
Death Note sucked. Yep.
You mean the live action sucked is what you mean.
Live action sucked. Yeah, the anime was great. I loved that. Which was also, was that also on Netflix?
Which one?
The Death Note anime?
Yeah, I mean, it's on Netflix. I don't think it's a Netflix anime show.
No, it's
not
Netflix. It's a Netflix original.
But it's on Netflix. Yeah, I think, you know what? Wow, I think you're right. I think Alita Battle Angel is the best anime adaptation to live action that they've ever made.
To date.
If there's other ones that we're not thinking of, I would love to hear about them.
Yeah, so with that alone, it should be something that we get to see more of in the future. And I don't really understand why we need 5 Avatar movies, you know.
But well, there's going to be whatever. 3, I think. So I have some final thoughts on Alita Battle Angel. So my final thoughts on the movie are, first of all, I don't think I mentioned this during the rest of our talk, but there was a great interview with, I'm going to mispronounce the name again, Leta Kalogridis. My God, I need to know. I need to figure out how to pronounce that. But anyway, there was a great interview with her who co-wrote this script with James Cameron on a podcast called On the Page, which is a screenwriting podcast with Pilar Alessandra. And she was she worked at DreamWorks for a long time. She was in development at DreamWorks, if I'm not mistaken. And she has a great podcast that's useful for writers and specifically screenwriters. But on one of her episodes, and this was quite a few years ago now. This was, I'm going to say, at least 3 years ago, if not 4 or 5 years ago, that they had this podcast. And I actually was looking earlier today for the specific podcast that she was in. But I couldn't quite find it because that podcast has like over like 500 or 600 episodes. In any case, anybody that's interested in their process and putting this together and, you know, just any thoughts that she has on it, this person who co-wrote it with James Cameron, I would advise you to check out that podcast and look a few years ago for that. Now, she also wrote, I think, Shutter Island. Yeah, she wrote Shutter Island. Terminator Genesis. She wrote the pilot for Bionic Woman TV series, which I actually liked, and some other things. Anyways, I just wanted to point out that there is a great interview with her on that podcast. Final thoughts about the movie. I mean, overall, yeah, man, I really liked it. It was a fun movie. It was a great adaptation of an anime. Yeah. And, you know, some problems aside, it had some problems. It was not perfect. I really wish that it could have had an ending that didn't make the entire movie feel like set up for other movies. Like, it can do that, right. But it can also have a satisfying, you know, resolution in and of itself. So I would argue that it just didn't quite meet the quality of resolution that it could have. But overall, man, I loved it. I love the design of it. I'm a sucker for all manner of sci-fi and cyberpunk, as you know. And right. I would heartily recommend it to other fans of those genres.
Yeah, and again, most of the violence is against robots, and that's okay. So take your kids. It's a great family fun movie. It's a good
ride. It has some violence and some darker themes, but in the end, yeah, it's not too... What is it rated? It's not rated R, is it? It's rated...
No, it's PG-13.
It's PG-13. So that tells you what you need to know.
Anyway, before we're done with that, I do have a small bit of trivia in the form of a question. This movie is called Alita Battle Angel. In the anime, it's Battle Angel Alita. Do you know why it got changed?
I don't know for certain. However, I have a pretty good idea. So when you're titling a movie, you want it to be as appealing as possible to as many people as possible. For a PG-13 movie like this. So I have a feeling that by calling it Alita, subtitle Battle Angel, that makes it more relatable to people than calling it Battle Angel. Because if you call it Battle Angel, I think just from the title alone, people are going to get more of an idea of like a... It's going to be like people are going to see it more as like a hardcore sci-fi thing that's super violent.
A fight movie.
Which is kind of fair. But at the same time, it is a PG-13 movie. So I just assume that they called it Alita to make it more palatable to a wider audience, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense, and that's a very well thought out and articulated answer. Ooh. However, it's wrong. Sometimes you're wrong in life, and we all have to accept that.
Oh, you were setting me up for failure. Reason,
I was setting you up. Yes, it's kind of a trick question, because we did get this again brought to us originally and with heavy-handed by James Cameron. And James Cameron, as we all know, loves TNA. And by TNA, I mean that 95% of the movies he's done begin with a T or an A.
Oh, come on.
Alien. Terminator.
Come on.
Avatar. Terminator 2. T2. True Lies. You know, if you look at it, The Abyss. Avatar. Look at his movies and you will see a lot of T's and A's more than any other letter in the alphabet.
That is an interesting...
So I think it was conspiracy part of his theory? OCD. Yep. It was part of his OCD thing where he'd like break out in hives if it was named Battle Angel Alita. So he's like, boop, boop, and now we have Alita Battle
That Angel. Is an interesting and, conspiracy theory.
It's all based on facts.
Based on facts. Yes.
Based on facts.
Well, let's see. It is an interesting tidbit. I don't know that he sat down one day and was like, I need to title all my movies with either a T or an A at the beginning. But that is interesting.
Right.
Okay.
just pull up his filmography and go, you know, he might be right there. A final note, which is kind of a spoiler for the future. We will be getting back into some Alita on our next podcast where we talk about...
We are going to have a podcast about Captain Marvel. And I think we're going to do some comparisons to Captain Marvel versus Alita, since they both came out this year and they both are headlined by female action stars, basically.
He also did Titanic. That starts with a T. Alita might not be back on the big screen, but she will be back on this podcast.
James Cameron did Dark Angel on TV, which starts with a D.
Right. It was supposed to be Dark Angel, but he was like eating a burrito and it sounded like a D.
He wrote the screenplay for Rambo First Blood Part 2, which starts with an R. Actually, I didn't know that until I looked that up just now.
Yeah, I know. I'm scrolling down the list too, going,
Okay.
Before we go, we've been talking about all the source material. You and I have discovered that there are a number of ways for our listeners to also discover the source material if they're new to the Alita Battle Angel.
Oh, good idea. Good idea.
Say, the anime, which is called, again, Battle Angel, is available on Netflix. Not Netflix.
The anime is available on DVD, which I actually bought through Amazon. And then the comics, the manga, you can actually read through the first volume, I believe, is free through Amazon Prime. And you could just download it onto your Kindle device. You get
access to that.
You can also...
And all the others are available for...
The next two volumes are available through Kindle Unlimited on Amazon, which you can try out free for 30 days. And then the remaining volumes, I believe, are available through the Amazon Comixology partnership, which you can also get through Amazon for free for 30 days. So if you are interested in checking out the manga, which, by the way, are some of the, you know, the best manga I've ever read. They're really great. The artwork is amazing. Right. The writing is amazing. Go check that out on Amazon. So thanks for mentioning that, Jess. That was great.
Yeah, I meant to do it earlier and then I forgot about it until right now, but now's the perfect time.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. Now, in our next episode, we're going to have our non-spoiler review of Captain Marvel, along with a discussion about interstellar travel, traveling between the stars. Hope you'll join us there. And on that note, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation about Alita Battle Angel.
Again, thanks for listening, and we will be back.
Make sure to tune in next time.
Adios.
Signing off. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.